Welcome back to That One Show with the Newmans. I'm Ethan.
And I'm Bethany.
And today we have a very special guest with us. We have Justin Arnett with 765 Paranormal. And we're going to be discussing the freak out at the Fowler. But first, we're going to go into a little bit on what our experience was. We had an absolute blast. What about you, Bethany?
No, I had so much fun. There were so many vendors, so many different people that we got to meet.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, there was a ton of people that we met that are amazing people. And, I mean, it was just all around a blast from, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning setting up to 4 o'clock in the morning the next day going home. I mean, yeah. It was fantastic. We had a lot of events going on. We had several vendors that we got to meet up with and network with, and they all had a lot of fun, too, from what we've heard from them. So, definitely a must-go-to paranormal convention if you're ever out in the area, for sure. So, we've got Justin Arnett on the line with us, and we're going to bring him on so that he can kind of talk to us a little bit about Freakin' Out at the Fowler. You there with us, Justin?
I am. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you, buddy?
Oh, I can't complain.
Well, good deal, man. Well, we're very happy to have you here. We're really excited to have you on board. Justin, for most of y'all, he is the lead investigator of 765 Paranormal, who was also the folks that actually put together Freak Out at the Fowler. So that was phenomenal. Y'all did an amazing job. And, you know, we really want to see what Freak Out at the Fowler is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I would be an awful human being if I took full credit for the freak out. But, you know, I had so much help with my team, Tiffany and Dwight, and just everybody was just so helpful putting this together. Not only that, the town of Fowler, the Fowler Theater, the police department letting us get access to the jail. Literally, it was just a huge group of people that really came together to put this and make this such a successful event. So,
yeah, and the success it certainly was, that's for sure. I mean, there was several people that showed up. And whenever I say several, I mean more than just like five or six. We're talking about several hundred from what I could see. I mean, there was folks walking the streets of that small town everywhere. So now what exactly is the Freak Out at the Fowler about? Like, what is it?
So the Freak Out at the Fowler, a couple different things. The first thing, you know, we made a really good relationship with the Fowler Theater about two, three years ago. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Fowler's an extremely small town. I think it's got about 3,000 to 4,000 people that live there. There's a lot of smaller businesses that, you know, that are closing down. And at one point in time, the Fowler Theater itself was going to get tore down. Luckily, it was saved. When we saw this place for the first time, fell in love with it, just so happens it was haunted. So we kind of teamed up with them. We started doing what's called movie mayhem events, where people can pay to come and see a movie. And then afterwards, they get to hang out behind the scenes with 765 and stay after the movie theater closes to do an investigation with us.
Wow, that sounds
kind of shook off. Yeah,
sounds good.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, and then from there, it just kind of took off until let's make this into a convention. You know, let's make this big. Let's bring more paranormal groups. Let's do overnight investigations. You know.
Well, so, yeah, why not? If you've got a huge group of people having a lot of fun at the mayhem thing, I mean, why not? I mean, bring everybody from across the country, right?
Exactly, and I feel like we did that. I mean, we had. I know I talked to a lady who was from Canada.
Oh, wow.
And I also talked to somebody else who, I don't mean you guys are from Tennessee, but I feel like there's somebody even further south than you guys that I ended up talking to that day. So, I mean, literally we had people from all over, even from outside of the United States that came to this event. So, well, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah,
especially for the first year.
That's phenomenal. Yeah, especially for the first year. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe I heard that news outlets in like Tallahassee, Florida, and El Paso, Texas, actually shared the paranormal convention. Is that right?
They did. They absolutely did. Which was kind of news to us. We definitely was not expecting to see, you know, news of the Fowler, the freak out of Fowler, to reach so far, but it did.
Wow, that's just crazy.
Now, I have a question for you, Justin. How do you think overall the convention went for its first year?
So, the first time, you know, and this is 765's first convention that we've actually put on. But being a part of a lot of other conventions, I know that the first year is always the hardest and the scariest. Just because you know, it's kind of like no one knows, obviously, about the Freakout Fowler because it's brand new. No one knows it's going to be good. You know, no one knows, should I really drive? You know, you guys drove almost 6 hours to get up here. You know, does somebody want to drive that far for this thing? They don't even know what's going to happen. You know, there's so many little kinks and quirks that can go right or go wrong. And you don't really know until you're in the moment. So, I mean, we were a little concerned on how well we were actually going to pull this off. But again, it kind of goes back to what I said before. Literally the entire town of Fowler came together, helped us put on this event, and it went great. I was expecting half the amount of people that actually showed up to really come. I was expecting 100 different issues, and really we didn't have any at all. Everybody seemed to be extremely grateful and thankful that we had the event. I heard nothing but compliments. So, I mean, I think it went great. I couldn't have asked for more.
Yeah, absolutely. And from, you know, what I could see from the inside and the outside looking in, you know, it flowed very smoothly, especially for the first year. I mean, it was very well planned, organized, and executed.
I will say that this has probably been about a year in the making. We've talked about it for about a year and a half, but probably actually started planning anywhere from 9 to 12 months ago. So I would be lying if I said that we definitely did not take the time to prepare for it like we should.
Well, I mean, certainly seems like you spent a long time.
Yeah.
And
it was worth it, though.
And I will say, too, that 765 is a group that works really well together. We're a big team, but everybody's so close and is so good at communication that I think this also helped this convention go so well.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing that I do want to say is, you know, 765 Paranormal is a whole completely different breed of paranormal groups. And one thing that I think really showed that to the convention participants was the documentary. Because in the documentary, I won't spoil it because we're soon going to have that live on the 765 Paranormal website or YouTube, whichever platform it airs on. But, you know, at the very end of the documentary, you can see something that you just don't see with paranormal groups. And it's a very respectful and, I mean, it's just a phenomenal act that these folks have done. Not to mention that one of the biggest, from what I could understand, one of the biggest reasons for the Fowler Convention is to kind of boost economic growth within that area. And correct me if I'm wrong, Justin.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that was our main goal. I mean, I would say our main goal would have been definitely more in the lines of doing what we could for the theater. Not that I necessarily want to set our sights low. I mean, I'm definitely, the whole town of Fowler definitely could use the help. But yeah, I mean, that was our goal, so.
Looks like mission accomplished.
I would say so, too.
Okay, well, good deal. Well, what, speaking of the convention, what was your favorite part of the convention as a whole?
I would have to say seeing everybody, all the locals, you know, coming together. Because, I mean, a lot of these locals that came have been with us through these Movie and Mayhem events and really seen our relationship with the theater grow. And when you talk about us releasing our documentary, you know, them finally getting to see, I don't want to say a motion link picture, but, you know, a 45-minute documentary from front to back on exactly what we found at the theater, what our thoughts are, some of the investigations that we've done. I think they really, really like that. You know, it's kind of this story that's been unfolding for the past couple of years, and they get to see it in movie form.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got to say, after watching the documentary, it was very well put together, and I know I said this word earlier, but it was very well executed. It's, I mean, really good quality for a first-time documentary for your paranormal group.
Yeah, and all of that credit goes to Stephen Doyle. He's our producer. That man is a genius when it comes to filming. I mean, he had the whole outline of how everything he wanted, like how it needed to go, how everything needed to play out in his head before we even started filming. Like he knew what he wanted it, and it just worked out so well. I mean, he is a godsend to our team. So,
well, that's awesome. Are you in or is 765 and Steven going to be working together in the future?
Yes, we are actually. We already have plans for a second part of our documentary, and we are going to do the Fowler Jail.
Oh, buddy. Jail. Oh, man. All the listeners are probably... Sorry.
No. The jail itself has so much history, and I won't get into too much detail because I don't want to spoil our documentary before we even start filming. But I will say that this is probably one of the best places as far as historical value goes that we've investigated and been able to film at any length. So,
well, that's crazy. And any of our listeners will know the name Fowler Jail because I bring it up on almost every episode since that was the very first place that I've ever investigated and got some credible evidence that I myself witnessed. So, I think the documentary is going to be phenomenal. Ooh, oops.
I can only hope that it raises a torch to the Fowler Theater. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm excited to see it, and it's, y'all haven't even started filming.
Now,
yeah, and I believe our filming for that will start here in the next month or so.
Oh, great. That's exciting.
Now, is there anything that you would like to see differently added to next year's Freak Out at the Fowler?
I would say if I could think of, you know, one major thing would be us getting even more people there. Again, while I feel that it was a huge success, I still definitely think that we could attract a whole lot more people to really come in and see what Fowler and the theater and all the other places that we investigated really has.
Awesome. Well, yeah, and now aside from getting a bunch of extra people there, are there any different, like, activities or anything along the lines of that nature that you'd be looking to add to next year, or anything that you would have preferred to do differently?
Well, I mean, I know that Fowler itself is an extremely haunted town, and I know that there's been plenty of locals that have come and told me about different experiences and stuff they've had at locations that we've never even been to. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe there's a possibility that in the near future that we might have access to more locations, be able to open it up to even more people to come and do investigations with different locations.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I've got a My Haunted Fowler shirt, so maybe there's more to the Haunted Fowler than just the theater and just the jail. Maybe the whole town's haunted.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of I think where we're headed with the ideas of our documentaries is to show how many places in this small town are have activity.
Yeah, I mean, that's just crazy, though. Whenever you think of it, you know, it's a town, if I'm not mistaken, about 4,000 people, I think, is what I heard. I think it was Dwight say at the convention. And, I mean, to have this much activity, paranormal activity, within a small town like that, I'd have to put my money on this town possibly being one of the most haunted towns per capita in the country.
Can't say I've done my research, but I definitely would like to boast of that for sure.
That's just crazy. And it just so happens to be a paranormal group about 45 minutes to the east, I believe, of Fowler, called 765 Paranormal, that can investigate this stuff, right?
That's right.
That's crazy. So, now, as of right now, or this past convention last weekend, what locations were included in your tours and investigations?
So the three areas that we were allowed access to was obviously the Fowler Theater. We also had access to the jail, which is the same jail that we'll be doing our second documentary on. And the third place, which was my first time actually investigating, was the Opera House.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, is kind of my first time investigating the Opera House as well, because we got to spend all night with you.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was a blast.
It's a phenomenal thing.
I mean, it was okay until, like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning when everybody started getting cranky. But it was still fun.
I'm sure it was definitely in that cranky category.
Yeah, well, there was only one time.
And I will say, Ethan, I think, got his first legitimate paranormal hangover come Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah, man. See, whenever we were on our way home, it was probably about two and a half hours into the drive back, I said, honey, you have got to drive because I am dozing.
I think we switched 3 times in total between Lafayette and home. Like, I think we switched 3 times.
Did we?
I think so, yeah. So Ethan got his first real taste of what that's like to go on a longer investigation and how it feels afterwards.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. Man, whenever she took over driving, I grabbed a pillow from the back seat and I got nice and comfy in the passenger seat. Man, I was out like a light, and oh, it was the best sleep I think I've ever had in my life. You know, and I've in the past, I've done a search and rescue with the fire department, and we were out in middle of the forest for 48 hours, and I slept for probably about 2 hours on the floor of a camper, and went home, and after all of it was said and done, we found the guy, and went to bed, and I honestly think that the sleep on the way home from Fowler was better than that. It was just phenomenal. It was super comfortable, too. That pillow was amazing, too. But I had an amazing time out there. As far as you getting cranky, the only time I think there was a moment where you looked at me and you're like, you know, you could ask some questions, too. And I was like, yeah, okay. But that was the only time that I really noticed any crankiness. I think there was more tension between you and Bethany. Bethany wasn't feeling good. And you're like, gosh.
That's a sibling thing. I think we get irritated with each other anytime we're with each other for long extended periods of time.
I won't disagree.
Well, that's okay, because me and her get the same way for extended periods of time.
This is true.
I think it's a Bethany thing.
I know. I think you got something there.
Now, I do want to say, speaking of the Opera House, since that is where we were at for 6 hours.
6 long hours. I forgot long.
6 long, but fun hours
with
for
no
sure.
Air conditioning.
But what were your experiences, takeaways of the Opera House, since that was the first time the three of us had ever investigated at the Opera House?
You know, I had fun at the Opera House. I can't say that I experienced anything that blew my mind away. I do know that there was one point in time, and I know you guys were with me, where we were in the main dance hall room, and there were several loud bangs that sounded like it came from the room above us. Now, I know directly above us was the false ceiling, and there were bats in there. And it's very possible the bats could have been making the noise in the adjacent room above us, but they were really loud.
Right, right, yeah. That, the very first one that we heard, I don't think we were ever able to replicate that, because I remember you had went upstairs and started banging on all kinds of crap up there, trying to, you know, lightly, hard, you know, moderately, just to try to replicate the noise. And we were able to replicate, you know, a couple of the noises, which we automatically assumed from the get-go was the bat. But there was that one eerie thud noise. There was no way to replicate that. And I'll admit, that was kind of creepy.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you know, that's the thing is, like, you know, especially with our team, we always try to debunk first. And that's why I went upstairs to look to see if I could replicate that sound. And the fact that we were able to replicate some of them, and there were bats up there, you know, obviously they're living creatures. We can't control that. And we did not see what made those sounds.
Right.
So could it have been the bats? Absolutely. Maybe they hit something that we just weren't able to find to duplicate that sound.
I mean,
again, that's one night, you know, for what, 6 hours that we investigated. You know, when I first started investigating the Fowler Theater, I think I had been there, I would say, over the course of several nights and probably 20 to 30 hours of investigating, I was ready to say that I don't think there's anything here at the theater. Obviously, I was wrong. There definitely is something at the theater. So, you know, well, I, you know, if I had to give a final judgment on the Opera House and whether I would say if it's haunted or not, I would definitely say that I didn't. There was nothing that happened that I personally feel that I could say this place is haunted. But on the other hand, I would also say that there would need to be a lot more hours sunk into that place in a more private and intimate setting than not, you know, with 15, 20 people in there all at once to really determine if the place is active of any site of any type, whether that be residual or intelligent.
Right, something not so public. Well, what about the incident on the staircase? You had
I know. Yeah, so that that was actually a good one. So I think with our first round of people that we had, I was still trying to figure out where all the lights were, I could turn all the lights on and off were, and I went down this set of stairs to turn off the light. And on my way back up, this was all feelings. I didn't see anything, but it felt like somebody was coming up the stairs much faster than what I was walking, to the point to where it felt like they were going to, like, run right into me. Again, I didn't hear footsteps. I didn't see anything. It was just that sense, like if somebody was running up the stairs, I was getting ready to run into, you know, I kind of, like, wanted to move out of the way.
Get out of the way!
And again, you know, and I've been doing this for a while, so I don't really get jitterish or creeped out, you know, in places, even places I haven't been before. But for me to say that was for sure a paranormal experience, you know, I can't say that. You know, I mean, it's very possible that being in a new location, it was dark, you know, I'm trying to go up the stairs, and I just got creeped out, you know.
Right, and which at the same time, I went down shortly after because you had mentioned that, and I remember walking up and then feeling something touch my elbow. I mean, it almost felt like, kind of like a cobweb or something just brushing up against my elbow, but we literally had like 20 people walk up those same stairs on that same side of the wall. And, I mean, you think they would have dusted the walls going all the way up or something.
Well, you had that happen twice. Once on the stairs and once in the foyer of the building on the second floor.
That's right. Kind of creepy.
Yeah, and I will say that one thing that a lot of people either do or don't know about me is that I am absolutely terrified of spiders. So anytime that I go to a new or old location, it doesn't matter where I'm going, I'm on guard for, okay, where are the spiders? Where are the spider webs? You know, and granted, that wasn't like a dirty building that I felt like I had to watch out for spiders. But again, like I said, anytime I go on an investigation, that's something I am constantly looking for. And I didn't see any spiders or spider webs in that entire building.
You know, kind of thinking of it, I don't think I remember seeing any either. I mean, it honestly seemed like it was still being used frequently enough to not have a bunch of cobwebs out everywhere anyways.
Yeah, right, and I kind of agree. Like, I definitely saw some newer boxes and stuff in there. And I think it's called Edder Tire Service, which is kind of just like a tire replacement company. It's the one that owns the building. And downstairs, they've turned it into like a garage where they do their work. And upstairs, they've kind of left the historical part of it, you know, untouched. But it did look like they used it for storage and whatnot. So for them to, you know, make sure that that stays maintained and clean is probably not far-fetched.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I'd be curious to see what future investigations would uncover, or, you know, what kind of information you might find out. Because I know Bethany did a lot of research on the location, and it seemed like she was having a fairly tough time getting any details for that specific location.
Right, and I mean, one thing that we keep running into with the town of Fowler, and again, this isn't something that we can prove, but that it seems that it's very possible that the town of Fowler could have had run-ins with the Mafia. And this would have been right around the time that Fowler's getting started. Like, I know the theater has got, you know, different, you know, stories and myths about, you know, the Mafia running through there, not too far from there. Supposedly would have been like a dumping ground for, you know, like, bodies that the Mafia wanted to get rid of. Not too far from there is a place called Malavia, which was like a spring, which does have proof of Mafia ties there as well. So Lafayette at one point in time would have been, was called actually Little Chicago, and they thought that Lafayette would end up getting bigger, almost as big as like an Indianapolis now, because of how close it was to Chicago. So, I mean, and Fowler's only 30, 40 minutes away, and it's actually between here and Chicago, so that would have been a stopping point for any Mafia dealings that might have been making their way down south. So, again, while I don't have any proof that there was any sort of Mafia dealings in Fowler, it's a very good possibility, and as you know, most of the time when there is dealings with the Mafia, they kept all of their business hush-hush.
Wow, yeah, and you know, if the Mafia is, or was, in fact, involved, I mean, that certainly, I think, could create one of the most haunted towns in the U.S. with, you know, especially if they used it as kind of a dumping ground.
Right. And again, it's not something that I'm for sure of, nor do I even have anything remotely close to, hey, this might be evidence of that.
Right, right. I mean, you know, you got to start somewhere, though.
Right.
And I will say, I think we had a pretty decent flashlight session. I know that's something else that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I know during that flashlight session, I had, I don't know what happened, but my arm started burning, and even Ethan felt it and felt like it got sunburned.
Yeah,
it
felt warm to touch, like a sunburn would.
But, I mean, other than that, I don't think I had any other experiences. And even me not feeling well was not due to the Opera House. I really hadn't felt good for most of the day. So other than my arm getting hot, that's really all I had.
Yeah, I will say the flashlight session would be something that I'm pretty interested in, because majority of the time, I think if we probably asked the potential occupying spirits there to turn it on and turn the flashlight on and off maybe 100 to 200 times that night, and about 195 of those times it actually worked. Like the flashlight would actually respond to the command. There was, you know, only a small handful of times that I could think of that it just stayed on, but whenever you followed up and said, please turn off the light, it would turn off.
Yeah, and I mean, the flashlight session is one of my favorite things to do.
I see why.
You know, I've had some really good experiences with it, but, you know, on trying to be devil's advocate too, I guess, there's so much that with the flashlight session that could, you know, that could be manipulated naturally, you know what I mean? That's why whenever I do my flashlight sessions, I try to be very you know, turn the flashlight off in 3, 2, 1 type things, you know, I mean, and not so much give nature the power to manipulate that, if that makes sense.
Right, right. And it looks very foolproof, too, the way that you set it up. And I think it was really good for the viewers to see the way that you do it, because, you know, you take the flashlight, you unscrew it while it's turned on until it cuts off the light, and then you smash it on the floor or on the wall or whatever you got near you to make sure that it doesn't even flicker on whenever you do that. And you do that repeatedly, and then you put it down. It's like, there's no way that thing's going to turn on. But here we go. Right. We had multiple times where it turned on.
Right. And again, I mean, it's one of those things where I tried to make it as foolproof, like you said, as possible. And when you ask the same questions over and over again, so if I say, you know, or if you're a man, turn the flashlight on, and the flashlight comes on, I'm probably going to ask that same question 2 or 3 more times to get the same answer, just because I want to be 100% sure that what I'm communicating with is actually a spirit and not just naturally, you know, like the natural electrons in the air that are creating that circuit to turn on its own.
Right, right. Which I will say, unless the words "please turn the flashlight off" generate less electrons, it was pretty much on command. I was thoroughly impressed. I mean, I was impressed at the Fowler, and I was impressed with this. I don't necessarily feel that we got as intelligent of responses as we did at the jail, but there certainly was on command interactions with whatever we were speaking with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, it was definitely a good one. I've definitely had better. And I wouldn't say that I was totally convinced that what we were speaking with was, you know, a spirit at the opera house. But again, I'm not going to say that I'm sure that it wasn't either.
Right. Right. Would you say that residual energy could potentially turn on or off a flashlight, or what would your thoughts be on that?
No, I don't think that would be a possibility. You know, residual energy is literally, you know, and it just kind of depends on what you believe. You know, I believe that, you know, we're all energy, and that we imprint our energy places that we go. You know, I mean, where we live, where we work. Any of like our favorite places to go, whether it be positive or negative emotion. And so you think of somewhere like the Opera House, you know, people would go there for shows and would have a good time and joy, and they would laugh. You know, there was pianos there for music and places to play poker and have drinks and, you know, like all of these, you know, probably both positive and negative emotions that were there over time, kind of like act like residue of a glue. You know, I mean, you take a piece of tape and you put it on, you know, a hard surface and you tear it back up. Sometimes that residue is left there, you know?
Right.
But it's just energy. Like, it's left there. Like, that residue doesn't have, you know, a brain or anything like that. It's just literally repeated energy over and over again. If it's possible that the flashlight was in a location where maybe, like, if... And like the dance floor, let's say people were dancing. So this energy, this residual energy is constantly moving. If it passes over the flashlight, is it possible that maybe that energy would be enough to connect it? Sure. That might be a possibility. But as far as residual energy trying to communicate, no, I don't believe that would be a possibility.
Well, I mean, that makes sense.
And I will say, too, like a comparison of kind of like what you were talking about, Justin, with the residual energy and how I feel about it, is that, like, at the jail, for instance, it's not my favorite place in the world to be. I do feel a little bit more, like, glum and, like, oh my gosh, we're in a jail. But at the Opera House, I had even made this comment that I felt at peace there. I felt...
That's not weird.
It's, well, but I did. I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, somebody's behind me. Like, this place is super creepy in the dark. Like, it was just, it was a calm place. And I do feel like there was a lot of positive things that had happened there, which is why that place felt like it did. And I do feel like sometimes with residual energy, even just your feelings in a building can be affected by what took place in those specific locations.
Right. What about the basement? How'd you feel about that?
The basement?
At the jail?
No, I felt positive and fine at the opera house.
Oh, at the opera house.
I felt uneasy at the jail.
Okay. I was going to say, everything about that jail for me is just uneasy.
Well, and you even look at it, let's take out intelligent spirits here and just look at the residual. You know, you compare the opera house versus the jail. Let's say they both had residual energy there. An opera house is going to be a place for fun and excitement and friends and memories. That is going to be traditionally, tied with positive emotion. Whereas the jail, I mean, even the workers there, I mean, like, you know, not even counting the inmates, like that must have been a hard job. You know, I mean, very few people in this world, you know, we have prison guards, but I'm not saying that they all hate their job, but I mean, like, I wouldn't associate being a prison guard with joy and excitement. You know, I mean, if you truly love being around, you know, criminals, like, so much that you just emit positive energy, something's wrong, you know, I mean.
Right.
So, I mean, you look at the two totally opposite places and the type of emotions and energies that would have been put out at each one of those locations when they were active. You have a place for positive, and then you have a place for, you know, negative.
Right, yeah. I remember walking through the Fowler Jail with, and I think it was actually some of the crew from your documentary, and they were just talking about kind of the heebie-jeebs that they were getting from that place. I mean, it was really kind of an unsettling feeling being in there, specifically for me, in the basement and the padded cell. That one's pretty rough, too. Now, I know whenever we did the investigation, and I don't know if I may or may not put it on here, but I did catch that EVP. That's what they're called, right? Whenever you, the recordings. Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah, what, electronic voice phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah, that one. I know that I sent that to you, and you listened to it as well. What were your thoughts on specifically, like, the key jingling sound?
So, you know, and those are the types of things that, you know, that I look for, is that, so we think about the jail and, you know, what kind of sounds or voices would we have heard, and, you know, keys jingling, and, you know, and not only did they sound like keys jingling, but they sounded like an old school, you know, circle, like key ring set, like with big giant keys hanging at the end of it and shaking as somebody's walking. At least that's what it sounded like to me. So to me, that was like a very real and relevant EVP that we caught there. You know, and again, playing devil's advocate, you know, and this is something that, you know, as a group that we have to pay attention to and be aware of, is, you know, how many people left their keys at home base that night, or in their car, or not on the investigation site. You know what I mean? Like, if it was your first investigation, it's not something we probably told you. It's very possible. You know, we had the, you know, some other people there that night as well. Can I truly say that everybody's keys was accounted for that night? I can't. So it's one of those things that, you know, I know now, moving forward at the jail, that everybody needs to leave their keys, you know, at home base and not on them. Does that make sense?
Right. No, absolutely. And I actually do remember specifically, at that investigation, Bethany had told me to take my keys out, and we actually left them at home base, and essentially, I don't even think I had my phone. I think my pockets were completely emptied, and I do specifically remember that session, and that's actually why I went to that whenever I was looking at the recording, because I wanted to hear what was going on, like, if there was anything going on whenever me and I think it was Samantha were in that padded cell. And I remember specifically, which I'm sometimes hearing challenged, but I don't remember anything but silence. I could almost hear my blood flowing through my neck, you know, while we were doing that. And at the same time, coincidentally, the keys were jingling as the flashlight was flickering. And then whenever it sounded like the keys were being fumbled with, the light cut off. And to me, I was just like, well, there we go. Okay.
Yeah. And like, that's one of the things too, as far as like investigating new places, is that, you know, there's so many things that you don't know what to expect, you know. And even like experiences like yours, you know, like we, you know, I can tell you, you know, about, you know, XYZ experience that I've had, but some of those experiences, unless you're there, you know, just, you know, as a matter of fact, like the Opera House, like how, you know, somebody, you felt like somebody touched you, and like, I felt like something was like running up the stairs behind me. Like, we have no physical evidence of that. And I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, are just going to be like, well, it could have been these billion different reasons on why it happened. And while that those billion different reasons might actually be legitimate, it's so hard to truly tell somebody and convince somebody on an experience that you had on that type of level, you know?
Right, right. No, and you know, I think I'm one of those people as well. I'm very skeptical. And in fact, Bethany had said something that had caught my attention. She brought up that, you know, with how much hair she loses sometimes, like it just kind of falls through the air, that it very well could have been her hair that touched my elbow. And I'm like, you know what? That's probably right. So I'm pretty skeptical too, but the keys, not so much.
And I will say too, that I think that's why it's really cool that we can bring people into these places and let them experience things on their own. And I think that's kind of how you get stuff like this out to people, is letting them have their own experiences. Because with doing these tours, let's say the people who did the flashlight sessions felt something, saw something, you know, heard something, they're going to go home and tell their friends and family, and then they're going to, you know, grow an interest for things like that. I mean, some will, some won't, but that's kind of how you bring people together with stuff like this, is by letting everybody have their own experience.
Right.
Right.
And I know we had a few people that did have experiences, and they thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I mean, and that was really neat for me to see people say, I saw this, or I heard that, or I felt this. And that's so cool, because these are people that might have never experienced anything like that before, but because we had this big family, this big convention, they're able to attest to certain things because of their own experiences that they had.
Absolutely, and I think that just adds to the credibility of 765 Paranormal, because...
And the value.
Yeah, the value. I mean, like I said, what other paranormal group does some of the things that 765 does? I mean, of course, I'm not going to spoil the documentary. You got the stuff that happens on there, and then you've also got the, like, community engagement that 765 has, which I think is phenomenal. I mean, that's just crazy.
Right, and, you know, and kind of almost getting off topic, but, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, that's kind of like our goal, too, is what we call paranormal unity. You know, like, we want to bring other teams, you know, into this world and help them, you know, grow it and become something. You know, I mean, so we at the freak out at the Fowler, we had, you know, invited a bunch of paranormal teams to come set up as vendors and set up their tables and be able to show off what it is they do. Like, I know there was a group there, I can't remember their name, and I know you guys will, that had a Bigfoot cast. Like, they were watchers,
the Wisers.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's awesome. You know, I mean, like, you know, going Bigfoot hunting right now would be totally out of my element, but I would love to do something like that. You know, I mean, you know, right. They would have, if there was a, you know, a Bigfoot hunting convention where, you know, I get to go and like set up our 765 table, and then at the end of the night we're all going to go out to the woods and look for Bigfoot. Like, I couldn't tell you how excited I would be to do that. and kind of going back to what Bethany said, like, you know, providing an opportunity for people to go into places they probably would never get to see if they get, you know, an experience or something like that. Like, you know, that's awesome. And I'm glad we do that. And, you know, and there are other teams that have the same mindset as us, you know, and I guess my want, you know, is to be able to reach out to these different teams, whether they're paranormal teams or whether they're, you know, by themselves psychic mediums or whatever, or if they're just a regular, you know, person that just wants to have fun and go to creepy, spooky places at nighttime and see what happens. Like, you know, I mean, that's paranormal unity.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better myself. And I will say from firsthand experience that the paranormal community is specifically the one that you brought together, or that 765 brought together for this convention. I mean, the whole thing from one end to the next, it seemed like everyone was like family. There was, you didn't have to deal with the judgment that a lot of people would have with people saying, oh, you believe in the paranormal? Ugh. Or, you know, you're breaking religious laws by looking into it, because everyone was there together with a common interest and a common goal, and everybody was just super friendly. Probably the friendliest interactions I've ever had in Indiana.
I swear you're purposely trying to pull me off topic.
Hey, that's all right. That's what this podcast is all about.
Yeah, but, you know, kind of talking about, you know, the family and stuff, you know, like, there's a lot of paranormal teams out there that, you know, I don't want to say look down on, but for lack of better terms right now, look down on teams with a large number of people, because, you know, a lot of teams believe that how can you truly investigate a location with so many people? You know what I mean? Like, and it is true to an extent. You know, I mean, again, we talked about, you know, our experiences at the Opera House. Like, you know, it was us three and anywhere from 10 to 14 people in there at one time. Like, you can't keep track of everybody and what's going on and what who's in, who's doing what. But the pro side of having a larger team is the different mindsets and beliefs and how people go about things and, you know, thinking outside of the box. You know, I mean, you know, you were talking about potentially, you know, that what you felt on your elbow was one of Bethany's hairs or anybody's hairs that was longer than that. I would have never thought of that. You know, I would have thought of 100 different things that could have been that's rational. It's probably something I wouldn't have thought of. But being able to have this family that has these different thoughts and mindsets and processes is what makes, in my opinion, a large team better. But again, it's not quantity, in my opinion, it's the quality of people that you have. You know, I mean, you know, every, you know, like, ever since the convention, you know, like, we've been getting blown up, like, oh, I want to join your team, oh, how can I join your team? You know, and I don't want to say that, well, 765 has, you know, this cap, and this is all we're taking. I mean, if I had 100 members in 765 and they all brought value and individuality and growth to the team and to the community and had the same mindsets we do, had the same, you know, like, passions that we do, then so be it. I'll have 100 people on 765. You know, and if it was only three people and that's just the quality of people that we had, then so be it. That's how big 765 is going to be.
Well, I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, you know, a lot, like you said, a lot of other paranormal groups may not agree with that, but I mean, it sounds like a very logical way to approach it.
To each his own.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Each group works different. Each group has different techniques and each group has a different number of members, but that is what makes us all so special and unique. But at the end of the day, we all have the same end goal, if you will.
Right.
You know, and we all work together to figure it out.
Yeah, and I think the leadership as well has a big role on how well the group functions as well. And from what I can tell, it looks like your team's running top notch.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you, you know, having us come to the convention. That was just a blast. Although I couldn't get my live stream stuff going, but, you know.
Except when I was grumpy, though, right?
It was only one moment. I mean, it was literally, hey, you know, you could ask more questions. I was like, all right, well, I'll get to it.
You've actually got my tired, grumpy tone toned down pretty well.
I can attest to that. You do.
Well, you know, it stuck. You know, it kind of stuck. But, you know, it's, truth be told, the reason why I wasn't asking any questions is because I was dozing off.
Yeah, you know, and I know you asked this question earlier about things that I would change. Probably one thing that I would change is somehow finding ways to, you know, allow members to have more breaks and time away. And I don't know how I would quite do that yet. But, I mean, you know, at some point, especially probably poor last group, I mean, like, I was just spent. So, I mean, and if that last group is listening to this, like, if I... if I was out of it, I apologize. But being able to keep ourselves fresh, I think, for each team or each group that came through probably would have been something I would have liked to have done better. And I know if I was struggling with it, I'm sure the other teams were struggling with it too. So it's just some way to keep us fresh.
Absolutely.
Right, right. Which, you know, luckily for you on that end, you had probably the least active location. So, you know, the second and third group, if you weren't as fresh, it wasn't as big of a deal because the hot spots were certainly the theater and the jail. So, I mean, you know, maybe not too big of a deal. But, yeah, I would probably agree with the resting and whatnot, but at the same time, y'all had a pretty massive workload on you, and, you know, y'all had to, it took every bit of the, you know, 23 hours that it took. I mean, y'all were working the whole time nonstop. I mean, y'all might walk to a nearby gas station, get a cup of coffee from time to time, but outside of that, y'all stayed pretty busy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that my entire blood was replaced with caffeine that day.
Would you like a cup of coffee? Here, taste some of my blood. Blah, blah, blah.
But, and I also want to say, you know, kind of as my, I guess, parting speech, is that I do appreciate the Fowler and 765 inviting us to come up, investigate, and share in this, you know, first for the group, and I know it's something we'll never forget, so.
Absolutely, and I would agree with that, you know, and really with the, of course, Fowler Theater and the town of Fowler, I know I appreciate it, Bethany appreciates it, and this, the whole 765 Paranormal team, I can't say enough about the entire team. I you know, I've grown attached to really all of them, and I have a whole lot of respect for each member that we were able to work with, and especially, you know, and also the ones that were not able to make it to. I think there was only one or two that didn't make it to the event, but I've also met them outside of this event. But I can't say enough about all of you. Y'all are all phenomenal folks, and just a lot of respect for y'all and what y'all do.
Appreciate it.
Anytime, bro.
And we also appreciate you coming on the podcast and, you know, kind of giving us your take and your stance on the freak out at the Fowler.
Absolutely.
No. Anytime. I love doing this thing with you guys, so you need me, I'm here.
Oh, absolutely. You can guarantee that you're going to be on more than just this episode and the previous live episode. You'll probably be a frequent guest of ours, so there's no doubt about that because you're a top-notch guest.
I'll be your Donnie Baker.
Yeah, there you go. That'll work. Well, I guess that's all the time that we have for today. So for our listeners in the audience, you know, be sure to go to 765 Paranormal's Facebook page. Give them a big like.
My Haunted Fowler.
Give them a big like. The Fowler Theater. Give them a like. Make sure you visit the 765 Paranormal website and also their YouTube page because they have a lot of exclusive content along with My Haunted Fowler as well. So make sure that you subscribe to their YouTube pages. And while you're at it, why don't you go buy that one show with the Newmans page. Give us a like, subscribe on YouTube and Spotify and all the other podcast platforms, Google, Apple, you name it. We're there. So just, you know, make sure you show some love and show some support. These folks are doing phenomenal things, and we're excited to tag along and see what happens next. Justin, we appreciate you taking the time with us tonight, and we look forward to future episodes with you.
I'll be here.
Sounds like a plan. Well, that's all we have for tonight, folks. Thank you very much, and have a great night, day, or morning.